And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection. Now, this is Doug Rocky, and it's still cold in Illinois. We had some warm weather, and the next thing we know, we got all kinds of cold weather coming back. And I think it's all over the country, northern part anyway. Well, first off, we're going to have an update from Denise, and then after that, we're going to go on, and we got a special guest. We're going to have some fun tonight, something separate, some good old growing up in America. But Denise, are you there? Denise? Okay. Well, hey, Bonnie, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
We're doing good. Well, you know, it's kind of fun. It kind of have everything. You've written a whole bunch of books and everything. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Bonnie Rocky Tennis, my cousin. It's not often when you get to have your cousin on your own radio show and talk about her books and everything and growing up in the United States. It's kind of neat, especially growing up in northern Minnesota.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, and I've been looking forward to this for quite a while.
Yeah, you've done so much since we were growing up together. We got both of our fathers are brothers, so we ended up with the same family, and we grew up together and known each other forever and ever. Bonnie's a couple years older than I am, so she got to see me come around and knew, hey, are you there? she knew me before I knew me. Anyway, what we're going to talk about is kind of like the books that she's written, and this is about growing up in Minnesota, northern Minnesota, the 1950s and the 1960s. I mean, you've done so much. I mean, you started out as a Russian linguist and historian, didn't you?
No, well, I took Russian and English at Bemidji State when I graduated from high school, and I taught school for a while. And then I became a farmer's wife, and I stayed home with my husband on the farm and raised the kids. And then I went back to school and got a four-year degree in nursing from the University of North Dakota. So, yes, I've been very busy.
Something about our family. Everybody does all kinds of different things. Well, I mean, you started writing books as you got involved. I mean, besides all of this, one of the first books you wrote was kind of a finding everything out about a person and self-fulfillment. And I Am a Woman, I Am a Person was the first book you wrote, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I wrote that when I was in my 30s. I had gone through a struggle and decided to take notes and put it together because someday I thought it would help someone. And now I was in our garage here after we'd moved for 20 years. I found a box of books in there, and here they were, just a few left still in the cellophane and everything. And I've been making use of them now, and I even had a study now for 4 weeks on it. And it seems like it's almost more appropriate now than it was then.
Well,
it's
everybody
really strange how what you write lasts forever, I guess.
Yeah, it just goes there. Well,
Hi,
everybody's
Doug.
Always looking for self-fulfillment and self-development, aren't they?
Hello, Doug.
Denise, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, hey, Bonnie, we're going to let Denise do an update. She's got real important information. Denise, this is my cousin Bonnie. Bonnie, this is Denise, our nurse on our team. We've been together working together for a long time, as you know. Denise, do an update on what's happening in Washington.
Okay, basically this past week we had the Institute of Medicine, National Academy of Science report out on defining the illness. Now, two things came out of that. Number one, they couldn't really come up with a definition, and they recommended using the Kansas criteria, which is Dr. Leah Steele, that's done research on Guffor illness, or the Fukada definition. The definition is helpful and very important with research, and could be also helpful with the Guffor illness claims with the VA. They did decide and recommended that it be called Guffor illness and not chronic multi-symptom illness. Really zeroes in on the location, and which is normally used when there's an outbreak of unknown illnesses. So that was done. And then on Friday, Congressman Kaufman and Congressman Kirkpatrick, Republican and Democrat on the Oversight Committee and the House VA Committee, have released their new legislation. We don't have a bill number, but it is called Guffor Health Research Reform Act of 2014. So they just released the language of the bill, and what we've had trouble with is the RAC was set up by law, and a lot of veterans pushed for it, and it was supposed to be independent in nature. And over the past year and a half, we've had more and more problems with the VA, to the point that they were replacing members of the RAC committee and they were supposed to do six and then another six the next year. Well, they're replacing them all this year. And there's been a battle royal about that, much less that they censor the RAC report not to cover VA research and evaluate that. So the Congress has stepped in with a proposed law, which means that it will become independent of the VA. We'll still get the funding from VA, but we'll have the independent staff. The VA would only be allowed to appoint three members to the 12-member committee, and the rest would be the people would be reviewed and appointed by the Senate VA and the House VA committee. So it really makes it become more of an independent and under congressional oversight ability. So our next task is to really get co-sponsors and get this through the House and into the Senate so that we can get the corrective action that we've been working on. They worked on this bill for over a year, from March, I think it was the 13th of last year, when there was a big hearing, and VA, after that, continued to clamp down and take over. So this is our corrective action coming from the Hill to make this truly be independent, to not be governed so much by the VA secretary or whoever within his line chain of command has been doing this. So it's a big step forward. We've got to get it done. We have CDMRP money for this year. We have new studies being evaluated now to be funded. We'll have to work on funding again very shortly to get the funding for next year. So hopefully everybody will help us by writing to their congressman right now and asking them to get with Congressman Kaufman, who is the lead congressman leading this charge, to sign on with the Guffor Illness Research Reform Act of 2014.
Can you make sure we get an update on Denise so we can put that in the archives?
I certainly will. In USA Today, Kelly Kennedy covered it on Friday, so there's an article out that she wrote. We have a Forbes article out on it. So the news has gotten out on it. Apparently they're having a hearing, I believe, on March 26th, which will be kind of to formally introduce the bill through the committee, and Mr. Benz will testify, and we'll try to work to get that on C-SPAN so everybody can see it. The other thing that is happening besides, you know, the upcoming push again annually for CDMRP would be to... you know, get the VA to cooperate better. They have not been cooperative from the get-go, as we've talked about. So we've got to get their RAC back to an independent status, and this is the bill that will do that. IOM ended up saying what we said of go with an existing known definition like Kansas, Dr. Leah Steele, and the name it Guffor Illness. That study from the IOM cost over $800,000. For 150 pages of a literature review. This kind of misspending of money to go to the IOM for the treatment study that was done last year, this definitional study, that's not helping us. It's not helping getting the hard answers of the diagnostic test and the treatment that is needed. On March 19th, coming up here, we'll have a call-in for the IOM meeting, which they needed to have before they have their report come out April 28th. So March 19th, if you go online and Google VA RAC, GWIR, you'll get their minutes, their meeting date and the call-in number with the agenda is there so that you can listen in. They're working on finalizing the report that will come out in April in D.C.
Just seems like a never-ending thing, doesn't it?
Yeah, today I'm thrilled we've got legislation to straighten out the problem with the rent. I'm thrilled about that. I'm thrilled that we're going to call it Guffor Illness. Hopefully the VA will stop playing around with names and let's move forward to find treatment. But I know I've been in the battle a long time, you have too, but it gets very hard when you see the VA interfering and that we have to divert our energy to get a bill passed to correct that problem. And whereas the full effort should be of helping the veterans to help them get the right diagnosis, to help them find treatment that works, and to help get their claims through. There's no priority to get the Gulf War illness claims through. We're in the backlog with everybody else. It's been 23 years. The Vietnam vets' claims, I think, are going much better than ours. We have new inflow from OIF and OEF, but where is it of taking care of one-fourth to one-third of us that served in the Gulf War and helping those people be able to survive day to day, and that it's a real physical problem? I almost feel like we need a national effort to find the answers.
But one of the problems we run into is they're still not talking about the actual numbers that we're seeing for casualties.
Yeah, they quit putting out numbers for us. We don't have any numbers to validate how many have died and why they died, how many that are still alive and what diagnosed illnesses they have, and how to connect all that. So it's like, you know, I hate to say it. I really hate to say it, that it's the cover-up. But to me, after 23, 24 years, I just feel like, will we ever get the answer before so many of us die that we're gone?
Well, that's what happens when the majority of casualties are due to friendly fire.
And it doesn't value our soldiers or our service. At this point, I could not recommend anybody going into the military. You know, we need some honesty, some accountability. We need transparency, and that has not occurred.
Well, unfortunately, that's part of the decision that was made a long time ago when they wanted to cover up and hide in everything back during Desert Storm. And I know what happened to command headquarters because I was there, and it sure has happened ever since with Kilpatrick and Rotzker and everybody else. And
I've been the one to always offer hope and get into the research projects. You do get some answers that you wouldn't get through the VA. I've done all that. But this lady's hope is getting really slim. I hope that we find some answers and some treatment, but when I look at the civilian chronic fatigue world, they're fighting the same battle, and they've been there longer than we have. And I just think that our nation has not abided by the promises given to soldiers when they're recruited. And no, it's not a new thing. They did the same thing with atomic zeps and Agent Orange. But it's really changed my mind about my own country, that they cannot acknowledge and help. And truly help. And I don't care who's at fault, whether it's the vaccine, the DU, combination. Tell us the truth. It's been 23, 24 years now, and it's time for truth. Pastime.
Well, we've attempted to do that, and we've been interfered with all along the way, as far as I can remember, from day one, because we started teaching all this stuff during Desert Storm, as you know, and you started meeting the command staff. Dunn and Wade showed up and tried to stop it all cold then. That was in the fall of 1990. Well, it's continued on.
I mean, if errors were made, Doug, it's time for them to be acknowledged and help the people they can help. You know, help them give some living ability, put their claims through without having to battle through appeals or notice of disagreements. You know, weed out the fraudulent ones, yes, but, you know, and I know they're there, but don't keep running us in circles, and that's what they've done, is go through every rat maze possible, from Presidential Advisory Committee to the PSOB to every one of the functions that we've had. It gets very old, and for one that has gone up there and been involved and testified and pushed, it gets very hard to keep pushing. But I know that we need the independence of Iraq. I will support that. I will encourage others to get on board and support that. there's no reason that they would have been attacked except that they were doing their job. So that we need to turn that around to where it should have been all along. And they are going to put the push on trying to find treatments. We've had diagnostic work on the brain done. We've had biomarker work being done. And, you know, if we have the commitment of the government to do right by us, it would be to help us finish this research and find some treatment and to quit putting the GFOR vets in a constant rat maze of trying to get help through the VA. I don't even know the words anymore, malfeasance. All the words I said before when we were up in D.C. together. It's just criminal activity to let your veterans suffer this way and to continue to go downhill, to continue to have vets die of cancers. We don't know which cancers or what rate they're dying of. And that's just wrong. And for them to put out a survey every 5-10 years and not even include appropriate questions to find out that information is wrong. It's a waste of money, and it's wrong. So I'm hoping that with the Oversight Committee's actions that we get closer. We're not there yet, but I will tell all of us we have to hang on. We have to be a buddy system and help each other, because otherwise you're alone in the middle of a mess, and that doesn't feel good either.
Well, I mean, we've been talking a long time.
So that's the update from D.C. We have a new bill that we need everybody writing and calling their congressman and getting to co-sponsor it, so that we can get an overwhelming number of co-sponsors. You need, you know, to make it really work, we need 2/3 of the House signed up, and that will push it to a floor vote. That would really be the power behind the bill, is to get 2/3 sponsors of the House and get this through the House so it can get to the Senate so we can get it done this session of the Congress. Because we cannot let something that we fought to get set up, be in the rack and get research and a good research plan, to stop, be stymied by the VA or the officials there. For whatever reason, they have no right to do that. To censor Mr. Benz's portion of the report on reviewing the VA research is wrong. The committee was set up to review all appropriate research that would affect GFOR veterans. And to say you can't write up about what we're doing in the VA, I mean, that just blows your mind that they would do that.
Unfortunately,
so please, everybody out there in Radio Land, call and write your representatives from your state, not just yours, but all of them. Get them informed about Kaufman and Kilpatrick's bill. It's co-sponsored, Democrat and Republican. And get them to co-sponsor that legislation, and it is the GFOR Research Reform Act of 2014. We'll have a bill number come up this next week. I'm sure we'll have a bill number to, you know, make it easier with a bill number. But please get on the phones, call your rep, and tell them that the RAC committee needs this, the GFOR veterans needs this committee to be more independent, and that's essentially what this bill is going to do, is make it more independent from the VA's whims. We need that. So please take your time, call your reps, send them an email. Let's get more co-sponsors on this bill. Let's make it work. The only thing we have that we can count on, besides having to fight our claims, is fighting to find some treatment, and we have some good researchers, you know, out there working it to try to find us some treatment to help. Whether it can be cured, who knows, but at least we could make a quality of life better.
Well, thank you, Denise.
You're welcome, and nice to meet your relative that's on the show today.
Yeah, both your nurses, long time.
Nice to meet you, too.
Nice to meet you.
Okay, well, you know, Bonnie, you wrote those books, and then the other thing, too, which was kind of neat, Because growing up in the 50s and in the 60s, you wrote the Growing Up Margaret series, didn't you?
Yes, I did. There are three girls who become friends in rural Minnesota town in those days, and each has a loss, and the losses bring them together. It's the first book, Growing Up Margaret's their sixth grade year, and the second one is their seventh grade year in school. And it's very, very much like what it was in those days, the culture and the time and everything that went on. It's close.
Just a lot.
Life, but then, huh?
A lot different than when we were growing up than it is today, isn't it?
It is. It's a lot different. It was safer. There were similar problems, but and we had to deal with them. There was bullying in those days, and there were a lot of things, but not to the degree that they are today.
Yeah. Now, your latest book, and we're going to read this today, I think it would be a lot of fun, is Grandma's Three Winks.
Yeah, that I wrote about 300 times, Doug, to get it where I wanted it to be. I just kept adding and subtracting and changing, and finally I think I got where I wanted to be. It's just a little story that it came to me in church one day, and it was written to honor families and older people, because as time goes on, we all get old, and the young take our place, and that's the story of life, and that's this book that I wrote, this little book.
Well, you wrote the book, and then Victoria Hogan was the illustrator for the book. I've got a copy of it here.
Yes.
And I think I'm just going to have some fun, and we're going to read this, and then we can talk about it a little bit.
Okay.
Notes for the parents. One Sunday, while I was sitting at church, the idea for this story came to me. The idea was to write a story about family and about life. It would be about how we need each other and how, as we age, younger people take our place as life's minutes, hours, days, months, and years pass. It's like when spring comes and trees bud and grow, rich, bright-colored leaves. Then summer passes and leaves turn gold and yellow and red in their fullest attire, adornment and accomplishment of their lives. While in their glory, a frost will come along and their life is done. The trees go through winter until spring comes again with its new life. Young and new take the place of old, and this is life's cycle. My story is about the importance of family and old and young. It's written to honor families, and it's a book about life. Grandma's Three Winks by Bonnie Rocky Tennis. Sometimes I called her Fancy Grandma because that's just what she was, fancy. It was obvious, as if she had been dunked in fanciness from head to toe. It showed in the way she walked and talked and dressed and kept her house. The truth is that everything about her and everything she owned seemed fancy. They say Grandma loved to look grand, and that she literally glowed the day I was born. Dots of red rouge on each of her cheeks and red lipstick on her lips, and her big red hair glittered and sparkled in the sunlight as she stepped out of her fancy red car on the street by the hospital on her way to meet me. They were a perfect complement to her soft brown fur coat, blue dress, and blue high heels. Like the brightest light reflecting on crystals that magically throw simmering, shimmering rainbow colors on a wall, her gold earrings and necklace shone when Grandma picked me up in her arms and kissed my cheek. "Welcome to our world. You are one little pumpkin," she said. Everyone noticed her that day. I started kindergarten because she stood out. Standing up tiptoes, hand over her eyes as a visor, she smiled and waved at me as I walked down the sidewalk and through the front door. "Have fun," she said. "Be sure to listen to your teacher." Year after year and all year long, my grandma watched out for me. I felt special. She never forgot my birthday and would make me an angel food cake with yummy, good vanilla butter cream frosting, and up candles for 1,000 secret wishes to come true. "Make lots of wishes, huh? All the wishes you want," she said. if you never make a wish or have a dream, you will never have any come true. The day before every Halloween, Graham and I put some old newspapers on our table and carved a jack-o'-lantern with a horribly scary face from one of her best pumpkins. When we were finished, we put a candle inside of it and placed it on the center of the kitchen table. The minute it was dark outside, we lit the candle and laughed at how scary it looked. As the light flickered and danced in the night, even witches and ghosts and goblins smiled when they stopped by to trick or treat. Grandma loved having guests on Thanksgiving. "Please, please, please, can I make the invitation?" I'd ask her. "You may. I'd love you if you made out an invitation," she'd answer. Once the invitations were in the mail, we waited for Thanksgiving Day. When the house smelled good from the best ever turkey and dressings cooking in the oven, guests began arriving. Thanksgiving dinner at Grandma's, the more the merrier. There were so many that they filled up her kitchen, her dining room, and her living room until there was no room left to squeeze in anyone else, she said. "The more that came, the more fun we'll have." After Thanksgiving, we waited anxiously for the beautiful Christmas Eve at Grandma's. Perfume from evergreen boughs and garland tied with red velvet ribbon would fill her whole house. Every corner and every shelf where there was room would be decorated with colorful lights and ornaments. Sitting around the fireplace and feeling its warmth and coziness, we'd drink hot chocolate with marshmallows, open gifts, and laugh. Sometimes we'd laugh till our bellies ached listening to friends and relatives still tell stories of past Christmases. Sometimes we'd even sing Christmas carols with Grandma plunking out the tunes on her piano. It was not always in tune, but we sang anyway. Almost hypnotized by magical blinking bubble lights on our majestic spruce tree with a star on top, we enjoyed the night that told us life was good. A peaceful, good feeling inside of me said, "You are loved and safe." "Merry Christmas," Fancy Grandma would say when we left to go home, "and Happy New Year! Next year will be the best year we ever had. I just know it will." Her chipper, hopeful tone made us all believers. Next year would be the best we ever had. And we put Christmas away for another year and made it through cold, frozen days of January. February came, and we waited all day long on Groundhog Day, hoping it was so cloudy the groundhog didn't see a shadow. "Can't wait for spring," it seemed everyone said, even those who swore they loved the winter the most. On Valentine's Day, Fancy Grandma always made the valentines from red construction paper and white paper lace. When she was done and thought it was perfect, she signed it. "I love you a whole bunch, Grandma. P.S. Dollar is for you to buy something special." When summer finally came, we waited for the 4th of July. It was set aside for family. Everyone brought food, and met at the park to visit, swim, and play all day. "Don't ever forget family," Fancy Grandma Ryan reminded us while she fixed hamburgers and hot dogs on the grill. Childhood dreams and days became yesterday, and my high school graduation came quickly. Grandma, although showing signs of aging, sat tall and proud watching as began my future. When I received my diploma, she smiled and winked at me. "Fall came too soon," Grandma said the day I left home for college. "I will miss you." When my college days ended, Grandma drove hundreds of miles to see me graduate. "I love you. I knew you could do it," she said, giving me a big hug as she smiled, winking at me twice. As years passed, Grandma didn't change much in looks except for her gray hair. "My whole head of hair is white now," she said. "I guess I'm not fancy anymore." Soon we noticed other changes. She began to forget names, some people, and things that had happened. "Too many things on my mind," she said about the day she couldn't find a purse. You will never believe where it was. It was in the refrigerator, she added, trying to make light of it. About the time Grandma began forgetting things, her doctor said she could no longer drive her car. She rode with the family to my wedding, insisting they arrive early so they wouldn't miss anything. After my true love and I were married, Grandma hugged me tightly. I love you so much, she said. Have a wonderful life. Then she smiled and winked at me three times. Not long after my wedding day, Grandma couldn't live alone. She moved to a home where nurses care for her. Every week I drive my big fancy car to visit her. I don't know if she knows me, but I go anyway. And when I leave, I smile and wink at her, holding her tightly. Then I say, I love you, fancy Grandma. That's kind of a short, cute story.
Well, thank you. I just kind of like it myself.
I mean, you know, when I read that for the first time, you know, when we were going over it, you know, and I read it, I mean, I remember, and we had so many of these fun days. I mean, if you remember when we were kids, and Grandma and all our parents and everything, we all went out to the old mill, which was out west in Newfoundland, and we had our picnics, and we literally had hot hamburgers and hot dogs on a grill. We went swimming in the pond, and we ran all over the hills.
Those were the good days, Doug. We had good times, and I really enjoyed the old mill. I just loved to swim. And it was hard to wait until they let us go in after we ate, too. Remember that?
Yeah, I think fun days and everything. I mean, you know, when I'm looking back at all those times when we were growing up, you and I are both way older than our parents were when we were little kids and we were doing all this stuff.
I know. And it just seems like it's gone so fast that I can hardly believe it, you know, when my kids are old, getting old themselves. They're probably the age... My kids are probably the age our parents were when we were doing all this stuff.
Yeah, it wasn't too far off. Yeah, they would have been because they were, yeah. Our parents were in their 40s at that time.
Yeah.
Like
isn't that something?
30s, 40s. Boy, that just seems like, I mean, when you started writing these series of books, I mean, Grandma's Three Winks is just a short book. It's real fun. It's really enjoyable. But how did you get the idea to write these books to begin with?
I don't know. I guess it's just my creativity. I don't know. There were so many good things that happened in those days when I did the 50s books and I wrote this one. I really did this because I had worked, Grandma Sue Winks, because I had worked with a lot of people with dementia and Alzheimer's, and I wanted to write that for them. And plus, I did bring in stuff from the past, you know, of course, of my childhood. But the Margaret books, there were just so many good things that happened. And actually, now the 50s are historical fiction. Really, it's that long ago. And I just didn't want all those good things to just die with the rest of us. And I started putting them down on paper and created my characters and tried to keep them consistent. And I put the books together. And I hope, you know, that they will go down in history as worthwhile books that depict what life was like then.
The 50s and the 60s were, I mean, so, I mean, there was... As you and I, we got out of high school and we started getting ready to go to college. Obviously, I went into the military right out of that. And you guys are all watching this. You're in college and then you're, you know, finishing college and you got married. But there was something so unique about growing up in the 50s with the family so tied together and everybody, you know, tied together. And then we had the turbulent 60s. Obviously, you and I both went through them and then we just kept moving on and continuing. But what is there in history, or why, yes, today you don't see that tightness in the families with all the brothers and sisters and aunts and uncles and cousins because everybody is so busy and doing things like we had when we were growing up, do you?
No, but one thing my husband Gilman and I have talked about this too is that people don't live in close proximity anymore. I mean, we had aunts and uncles that didn't live that far away, so it was easy to get together. And, you know, nobody lived. Well, you lived in Illinois, but that wasn't even that far. And you'd come home a lot. Your folks would come and visit a lot. But it seemed like you could keep the family together and the cousins together more when you lived close and you did things together. There were, you know, my high school and my school, we had a lot of cousins in our school.
Well, yeah. Well, look at how big of a family we came from.
Yeah. It was kind of fun. And then when they lived close and everybody got together, it was quite the celebration and the picnic. And I think it's that everybody's scattered so much today. The farms are gone and people have moved to cities all over the world. And that's pretty hard to keep in touch when people are separated like that. Although, you know, the internet has helped a lot in that respect.
Yeah, but you don't get the opportunity to see everything. I know when it was 100th anniversary of our family farm, Uncle Milford, who just died last year, called all of us home, and, you know, all the brothers and sisters were still alive, came home.
Yeah.
And almost all of us came home, too. All of the cousins came home. And I never forget that big picture, and we've still got it here. I mean, there was over 300 of us.
I know. We have that picture, too. So it was quite a crew.
Yeah,
that came back that day. And then after that, people started to go. I wasn't everyone pretty much alive then?
Yeah, they were. I think, yeah, pretty much. I think there was only two where they were gone at that time out of the 12. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So things have changed. But then I thought, well, I was thinking the other day, if my dad had been alive now, he'd be, oh, I suppose close to 110 years old, which, you know, that's not going to happen very often, so.
Yeah, I mean, my dad was, your dad was a couple years older than mine. My dad, he was born in 1913. Your dad was born, what, 1908 or 9?
Yeah. Well, 106 maybe then.
Yeah.
506.
It's just weird. Well, I'm sitting there fighting this crud that I got. But the other thing, too, you've been writing poetry. I mean, you're writing books about growing up in the 50s and the 60s. You're writing a book about finding soul fulfillment. You're writing a book about Grandma's Three Winks, which is a totally enjoyable book. But you're also doing poetry. How did you get involved in doing poetry?
Well, I've always written poetry. It wasn't all. I've looked at some that I wrote when I was in college and young, and it wasn't all that great. But it's just a gift, I guess. You know?
Yeah, I mean, one of the poems I'm looking at here, and I mean, I've got these, they'll be coming up here whenever it warms up, is the Tiger Lily.
Yeah.
Tiger Lily, orange and brown, let me take you home with me. Let me put you in a vase, show you my company. Tiger Lily in the weeds, in the grass, within the ditch, let me decorate my table. Let me find your little niche. Tiger Lily, growing wild as I go by, you wave to me. I shall leave you where you are to be what God wants you to be. I mean, we got tiger lilies all along the road ditches here and in the field ditches, the irrigation ditches, and over along the trees. I mean, the tiger lilies just grow wild here.
Yeah, that's the way they were when I was a kid up there, all the way to the old mill, just and all the way to town, tiger lilies in all the ditches. But I don't see as many of them anymore. Also wild roses. There were wild roses all over when I was a kid.
Well, I think the big difference is as farming has changed, you know, basically when they're farming their field, they're farming from road to road.
Yeah.
And that didn't necessarily happen, you know, in the fields when we were growing up. I mean, you know, we had the family farms all right there, and you and I could go back to our grandparents' farm, which is, what, maybe only 3 or 4 miles from your dad's farm, something like that.
Yeah.
Maximum, wasn't it? Something like that.
It was. And across country, it was less. I used to walk there all the time, go visit my cousins.
Yeah.
I'd say, I'm going. And somehow I got back. Somebody always brought me home after we played the whole day.
Yeah, that's easy to do.
But today, I don't know if a person should be walking 3 miles anywhere alone. It's a kid. That's the difference, you know.
Yeah, today it's a little bit different.
Little dangerous to do that today.
You know, you wrote another poem here, and this goes back many, many years. To be 13 again and carefree, a whole lifetime of dreams waiting to be. For one young girl who is full of thoughts of days to come. To be 13 again, running barefoot in the pasture and dancing in the wind under oak and cottonwood trees. I remember when we danced a polka without music, played wedding and funeral, and went to the prom in our dreams. I remember never knowing the pain of life, its wars and its conflicts, its poverty and its injustices. I just knew that life was good and dreams would someday come true when I was dancing barefoot in the wind.
That's the 50s. But then I lived in a town where they didn't approve of dancing, so I was a little bit of a rebel there because I loved dancing. I loved to dance in the wind. And
well, I remember New Folden at that time when we were growing up. It was just a small town in northern Minnesota, north of Thief River Falls and south of Strangquist and all of that. And, I mean, everybody knew everybody, and no matter where we went or what we did, everybody knew everybody. I know when we came up from Illinois for our summers, or I spent the summer up there with you guys, it was just kind of like, oh, you're home.
Yep.
It didn't matter where you lived. That's home.
Yep. Well, I have to tell you a good one. As long as we're talking about dancing as kids, I was over at our cousin's, and Harriet and I, we dressed up in some long prom dresses from her cousins that were older. And Aunt Irene had gone, she was expecting company one night for supper, so she wanted to go to town and get something, so she put the chicken in the oven, put the oven on, and here we are dancing in the kitchen with our long dresses and so on. And some one of us, probably was me, I don't know, hit the thermostat or the, it turned that oven up to 500 degrees. You know, she set the oven, I suppose, at about 325, and we turned it up to, by accident, to 500. And when she got home, she had a black chicken. I'll never forget that. I thought, oh, we're in trouble now. But nobody ever said a word about the black burnt chicken. So I don't know what she served for supper, but that we were dancing in these. We were dressed up and dancing and having a ball, but we ruined her supper, and that's one thing that I kind of have to laugh about today because it was so innocent.
What gave you the idea to start writing your Margaret series books? I mean, they're about growing up in the 50s. I mean, here you had a 6th and 7th grade year. Probably, what, the most significant time in somebody's young life right there, because you're all of a sudden getting old enough to understand what's coming on. You're doing your stuff in school to where you're learning to the point where the whole world's blossoming up to see what's in front of you.
Well, I guess I just had all these stories, and I had to create characters around them. There's one for sure true story in, I think it's Growing Up Margaret, that that happened to me personally, and that was the caviar and anchovy story. And I wanted to put this in the story because it's so cute, but I was in the cities. I was a little older, though, than 6th grade, and our Aunt Nella was there visiting. She wanted to take me out for lunch, and so we met at Dayton's, and she took me to the fancy restaurant there, and we're ordering, and she told me, I think you should order this, because I think she thought, like, culture, you know? She wanted to introduce me to culture. And then I looked at it, and it was a salad, and with caviar and anchovies in it. And, well, that's what we ordered, but I didn't eat very much of it because I'm not a caviar person.
Well, caviar is just fish eggs, isn't it?
It is. It is. And it's a delicacy in Russia, but for a little Norwegian from up north, it was quite the experience. But she introduced me to culture that day, and that's all that mattered. And that's one of the chapters in that book that was true, that I didn't just make up, you know.
So, well, here we go. Caviar, anchovies, and culture. It was a cool, crisp, early December day. Grandma had planned a trip to the cities for months and announced, "Pumpkin, put on your best dress and long stockings. We're going to Minneapolis tomorrow." Asked your dad's permission to pack a bag to stay overnight. "Oh, by the way, we are leaving early, so we'll get there by mid-afternoon, okay?" When she picked me up, she was wearing her brown fur jacket, blue dress, and blue high heels. She had rouge on her cheeks, red lipstick, and a bounce in her step. Her smile made her face light up and her eyes twinkle. "You sure are in a good mood, Grandma," I said. "You know me. I miss my old city life. Today is my chance to have some of it back again." It was at least an eight-hour drive to Minneapolis and would take us all day. Grandma had packed enough food to last until we arrived at the hotel downtown where we planned to spend the night. As we drove to Minneapolis, Grandma said, "Pumpkin, I've always felt you need culture in your life. You live in the country, so you aren't exposed to it." "What do you mean?" I was puzzled. "What's culture, Grandma?" "You'll see. Today I will show you some culture." After hours of driving to the city, we finally arrived. Grandma maneuvered her car into a huge parking lot that belonged to the hotel. We settled in and walked to Dayton's, the tallest and biggest department store on the huge city block. On the way, Grandma pointed out the festive lights hanging everywhere on the lampposts and stores to help put everyone in a holiday mood. "Look at all the lights, Pumpkin. Aren't they out of this world?" I hadn't seen anything like it. Huge stores with all kinds of colored lights were everywhere. Everything was decorated. As choirs along the street sang Christmas carols, we window shopped and watched all the early Christmas shoppers. Grandma and I thought, everyone has the same idea to shop early and avoid a last-minute rush. Each time we passed a Santa bell ringer, Grandma took our change out of her purse and put it in the kettle. It would ring and clang as the coins hit all the others. "Pumpkin," she leaned down and whispered. I never passed bell ringers without giving them a gift. They do a lot of good in this world. Then she added, "You always get back what you give 100-fold. In a special gift shop, Grandma helped me buy a holiday souvenir for my father. "Don't you think he'd like this?" I asked. It was exquisite. Smuggled in a display of antique gifts was a special little snow globe with winter scene and falling snow that played White Christmas. I loved it. "I think it was the most gorgeous snow globe I'd ever seen," Grandma said. Then Grandma turned to me and asked, "Are you hungry?" "Sure I am," I quickly answered. "I've been hungry since noon hour. Come with me." We entered Dayton's department store and leisurely walking and window shopping. There was a snowman village display right in the middle of the store where little children went one by one to sit on Santa's lap. Excitement lit up their faces, exploding with enthusiasm as they whispered to Santa what they wanted for Christmas. Watching them made me giggle. As I looked around, it seemed there wasn't much that wasn't festive. "Oh, Grandma, does it look just like Christmas?" I whispered because it had taken my breath away. "Be careful not to trip," Grandma cautioned as we both stepped on the escalator. Once we reached the top floor, we stepped off the escalator and walked to the sky room. "Here we are, Pumpkin. Do you like it?" Grandma asked. "I love it," I exclaimed. The table had white tablecloths with red and white flowers and candles. The places were set with green napkins, white china, and silverware. The waiter showed us to our specially set table and gave us each a menu. "What do you want to order, Pumpkin?" Grandma asked. "Hamburger and french fries," I enthusiastically answered. Grandma looked at me for a moment, then at the menu. "This is what I want you to order today," she said, and pointed to green salad with anchovies and caviar. "You try this at least once." And exactly what she ordered for me. One bite of the caviar was enough for me. It reminded me of cod liver oil my father gave me so I wouldn't get rickets. "You need that vitamin D in the winter because of the lack of sunshine," he reminded me as I gagged when I swallowed it. Grandma enjoyed her food. I left most of mine, but our time together was delightful. We had sat in a restaurant enjoying the holidays in a place of culture where I tasted anchovies and caviar for the first time. After dinner, Grandma and I went to the Nutcracker. Grandma leaned down toward me and whispered, "This is truly culture, Pumpkin. This is the ballet. Filled with magic of Christmas and its joyful sights and sounds and beauty, I quietly watched ballet dancers listen to music and sat close to Grandma. I felt wonderful, special, and loved all at the same time. I love today, Grandma, and I love you. She smiled. I felt Grandpa had given me one of the best days of my life. It was the day she introduced me to culture, and it made me happy. I love you to pieces, Margaret Louise Olson. Grandma hugged me and said, "That's kind of neat, Bonnie."
Oh, thanks.
Kids get the opportunity? I mean, I know with my kids and my grandkids, we're always taking them around. You know, we're close to the university. We can go to theater. We can go to music. We can, I mean, my grandkids would just as soon go to a play as they would go to McDonald's. I mean, we don't see that all the time anymore, do we?
No. Well, you have to remember, too, that so much of being up living where we lived, we had to make our own fun and our own entertainment. And it was important in those days for the schools to have a lot of drama and music because that's where we got it. We just didn't get on a plane or a car or go anywhere like people do today or like Grandma and Margaret went to the cities. That was a once in a blue moon thing, and I mean a real blue moon thing. But that was our life, and it was a good one. And then the 60s came, and I don't know what happened to it, but it drew, things started happening, and it was so different.
Well, I think one of the unique things is we all grew up, and I'm not sure where it all started. We got more and more education. We all developed our own lives and got involved in our own things and scattered to the four corners. I mean, when we were growing up, you never think that you're going to end up where you are or you're going to follow the path that we've all led into. I mean, it's just, who would have thought when we were growing up together, running out there at the old mill, where we would be today?
I know. It's hard to believe. You just have to follow your heart and go where it takes you, you know, where it leads you. And I do like writing. I should be writing more. But it takes time, and it's hard work. I have to do a third Margaret book to get her married off to someone.
How do people find your books? Can you give us some information on getting your books?
Well, I have them around here, and they're all on Amazon.com, all of them. And the poetry book, Snow Presents and Other Poems, and the two Margaret books you could get on Amazon.com electronically, too, and you can download it to a computer or to your Kindle, and you could buy it that way too, but they're all on Amazon.com.
So one book, I mean, Growing Up Margaret by Bonnie Rocky Tinnis.
Yeah.
And then the second book was Margaret Incorporated.
Margaret Inc. Yeah.
And then Grandma's Three Winks. Those are the three main books that you have. And then I Am a Woman, I Am a Person was the original one you wrote. Is that available also?
Yes. Well, that's not electronic, though. I haven't sat down and put that on the computer. I might have to if people are starting to want this book. But that you have to don't put Rocky in that because that won't come up. You just have to put Bonnie Tinnis on that one. And then Snow Presents and Other Poems you could get on there, too. And the three that are electronic are the Margaret books and the Snow Presents and Other Poems. You can put them on your Kindle.
Yeah, that's kind of neat. I mean, who would have thought? I mean, when we were growing up, I remember we could always get a book and always read books, and we always had books to read all over the place. I know in our house and your house, and books were one thing that were always available.
Yeah, books. I want to read a poem.
Sure.
It's a complete metaphor, and this kind of explains the struggle I had in I'm a Woman, I'm a Person. And I was looking on the internet at a used bookstore there, and here's how they described it. It's one woman's struggle to find herself. That's how they explained that book. But this poem, Broken Sparrow, I did poems along with that writing. I decided, well, maybe someday somebody will want to learn what I learned. And with people having so many problems today, it's kind of more fitting today than it was then. But anyway, it's called Broken Sparrow.
Go ahead. I don't know
if you've heard this one.
Go ahead and read it, because we've got only a few minutes here left.
Okay. Wounded sparrow, feathers torn, scattered by wind as far as time will go. Sparrow forsaken, freezing cold in spaces missing feathers, shivering in the barn even. Exhausted sparrow hurt so deep from running after feathers to put them back in place. Sparrow, despairing, crying out, wind, blow the feathers away forever. Broken sparrow begging, Lord, put new feathers in my empty spaces. Sometimes you gotta start over, and that just sums up struggle. Broken sparrow begging, Lord, put new feathers in my empty spaces.
It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
No, I mean, you know, we've talked about Warrior Connection. As you heard, you know, we got an update on what's happening in Washington. But again, tonight, the whole objective, ladies and gentlemen, as you listen, is talk about poetry and talk about writing, talk about a simpler time in life. Go ahead and get Bonnie's books, pull them up on Amazon.com, or even better, start writing in your own books, right?
Right. Just start putting your feelings down. You can work the other stuff out later.
Now, you actually were a psychiatric nurse, too, weren't you?
Yes, I did. I worked for the state of Minnesota for about, I would say, 13 years. Many of the days spent on the crisis unit admitting patients. I learned a lot then, and I learned how to be a person, actually, because of the struggle that I saw there, and I will never regret any of it, ever.
So again, this is one of the things, by writing and doing all this stuff, people can truly heal and get into a whole other part of life, can't they?
They can, and that's why it's so important. I mean, it's nothing is the end. You can always, the human spirit is resilient, and with the help of God and others, you can do a lot of things that you never believed you could do. It just takes patience and time. You know, my best writing came after that experience. Some of my best days came after that, you know?
You know, one thing was so unique, you know, going back to thinking of our grandma, I mean, she was born in, northern Minnesota, came from Norway when she was, you know, small. I mean, the stories you had when, you know, obviously when, you know, our grandma and our grandpa were born, before our dads were both born, they lived basically in a log cabin up in northern Minnesota in the wilderness. And Grandma lived long enough, and I remember talking to her, she lived long enough to see man set foot on the moon.
I know. Well, she was like 92, I think, when she passed away. I have a picture of her congratulating me at our wedding, and we'll be married 46 years now, so I should send you that picture.
Well, I've got that picture.
Doug, is that the sign we're done?
Yeah, we're running out of time. Well, Bonnie, thank you again. Thanks for everything. God bless America. Bonnie, thank you for writing your books. Ladies and gentlemen, Growing Up Margaret, Grandma's Three Wings on Amazon.com. And written by Bonnie.
Time for something, Doug?
Yeah.
My website is BonnieRockyTennis.com.
BonnieRockyTennis.com. There you go, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, and have a good evening. Thank you, Bonnie.
You're welcome. Thank you.